Hello and welcome to another episode of Transmission. I'm Luke and today we're taking a deep dive into a country that's making bold moves in battery energy storage, Italy. Joining Q is Mahel Fadel, CEO and partner at Sphera Energy. Mahel has spent over 15 years in renewables, working across Europe, APAC and the US before co-founding Sphera to originate and deliver large-scale battery projects. Right now, his focus is on Italy, a market undergoing rapid transformation as storage becomes an essential part of grid stability. In this conversation, they explore what's driving Italy's battery boom, how the new TSO-led auction model is shaping investment, and whether developers should be shifting from project development to long-term asset ownership. Mahel also breaks down the unique challenges Italy faces compared to the UK or US, from grid congestion to revenue stacking, and what that means for developers trying to build a sustainable business in this space. It's really fascinating to hear how deliberate Italy's approach to storage has been. Unlike other markets that have scaled storage through merchant risk, Italy is relying on structured capacity auctions, raising questions about how quickly private investment can follow. So, is this model the key to unlocking large-scale battery deployment in Europe? Or does it create barriers that could slow things down? We'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments. And if you're enjoying Transmission, hit like and subscribe. It really helps us reach more listeners and bring you more discussions like this one. All right, let's jump in. Hey, Mahel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Quentin. Great to be here.
So every time we do one of these special episodes where we look at a market or a power market or a country, it tends to go down really well with our audience. So we had Lars Stefan on to talk about the German market. We did one deep dive into the market in Netherlands. We've done one in Australia. And generally, these get a lot of attention and we get loads of really good feedback where people say, hey, I didn't know that. And I'm really glad that you went into such depth. So I'm hoping that this can be another one of those, all about the Italian market. So you're very welcome to come on, and we're really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, great to be here. I was also a big fan of those episodes, learned a lot. So hopefully, yeah, we'll be able to sort of deliver a bit of knowledge about Italy today.
All right, let's set the scene then. So your company, Sphera Energy, can you just give a quick overview about what that does and what you guys are up to, and specifically about the Italian part? And then I'm gonna ask you loads of questions about the Italian market, and we're gonna go deep.
Yeah, sure. So, Sphera Energy is a battery storage development company. We opened shop in late 2022. I've been in it full time since the beginning of 23, and we've focused so far predominantly on the Italian market. We have started some activities in Germany last year, but that remains sort of a smaller part of what we do. And in Italy, we are now 8 people. We're based in Milan, and we've become, I would say, in this sort of new wave of development of battery storage in Italy, one of the larger players in terms of development. And we'll talk about that more, I'm sure. We started the company with the idea of being a pure play developer. So, originate, develop, and then monetize by, divesting to other investors that would pick up the projects and build them and operate them. We're now we've been working for a while on a possible transition to a model where we build, own, and operate ourselves at least some of the projects we're developing.
And it's remarkable how many companies do that start out to just develop, and then there's something attractive about owning assets. Maybe before we talk about Italy then, could you just talk about the decision that you made there, where rather than just flipping assets, there's a bit of a loose term, but you're moving into the ownership and operating model?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think probably, all developers might have a slightly different story. Our thinking there was that there is certainly a lot of value you can create in originating and developing, good investment grade sites, but especially where you have markets that, need work to be done to get the project to a financial investment decision, to get a revenue stream strategy locked down, to get financing, and then building them and starting to prove the operation. We feel there's a ton of value there in the value chain beyond just ready to build. And I think one side of it is that we think we have the capabilities and we want to, be part of capturing that value that's beyond RTB. Now, whether it's, all the way to owning the assets 20 years, or whether it's, taking it to COD, operating for a couple of years and then, downselling it, that's still sort of, you know, something we're looking into. But there's value there, right? That's one point. And the second, I think, is just, you know, interests in our previous careers. We've all been part of IPPs, so we've seen projects being built. And yeah, there is something nice about, you know, going from paper to an operating asset.
There's also a lot of intellectual property or value in, if you know all the nuance, if you had to develop that site, you know it like the back of your hand, right? You know the nuances, you know all sorts of legal or physical characteristics about that site, which can sometimes get lost in a transaction. So you'd think that the people who developed it and built it might be the best people to operate it. But there's a few parts to that thinking. So let's go to Italy then. Can you give us the lay of the land for battery developers and asset owners in Italy? Why is the Italian market so attractive for batteries? And let's work backwards from there.
So first of all, I think the Italian market is still a relatively new market, you know. So to give you an idea, there are currently in operation 1,000, roughly, you know, give or take 1,000 megawatts in Italy of grid-connected utility-scale battery storage. There's a lot more sort of residential and commercial. There's about 4 gigawatts thereabouts. There was a boom of residential and commercial in the last few years. But if we're looking at, you know, utility scale, which is, I guess, what we both focus on mainly, we've only got 1 gigawatt installed. And to give you an idea, roughly, I think it was 800 megawatts were actually connected in 2024. So, you know, very, very recent installed base. There's another gigawatt, give or take, being sort of under construction, which will connect by the end of 25. And that's what's sort of, you know, that is what's currently the lay of the land in terms of existing assets. There are a couple more 100 megawatts, which recently won some capacity market auctions. So they'll presumably be, you know, built between the end of 25 and 26. But, you know, those are the projects that have FID and that will be built and connected. The rest is still to be sort of built. Well, built in the sense of, you know, it's the future of the market. It's what we're all working towards.
And of the assets, let's talk about those 800 megawatts that have been built in 2024. So they've just come online. How are those assets making money right now?
Yeah. So this first wave of projects that have been built, I think I really see the market as having two very distinct waves, right? We've had the first wave between 2020 and 2022, and I'll go into a bit more detail now. And then there's a completely new wave that has started since then. And so the assets that are being built have been connected and are being built now. They still belong sort of to the first wave of projects. And now, you know, there's a whole new chapter that's being written. So when we go to this first sort of wave, there were some smaller pilot projects, you know, in the 2010s and beyond, mainly built by the TSO, but, you know, very minor stuff. The first sort of more significant mechanism that was rolled out was a fast reserve auction in 2020, which procured, I think it was around 200 megawatts, although not all of it was utility scale. There was a bit of demand response aggregation. There was, you know, EV sort of aggregation in there. But it ultimately was predominantly batteries. And so that was the first sort of mechanism. And around 150 megawatts of those have been built now. And that was a mechanism where the size of project was constrained to 25 megawatts. So it's still relatively, you know, small projects and very short duration. Like they were 1 hour projects mainly, I think. Then moving on from that, there was 2 rounds of capacity market auctions. So Italy's always had, you know, has had capacity market auctions for a longer time, but they were opened up for batteries and sort of batteries with the capex coming down and all that. Batteries started to be a player in these auctions. First, I think it was in 2021, the first auction where batteries actually started playing a bit of a role, and then 2022, the second auction. And between these two auctions, I think it's around 1.8 gigawatts were awarded of nominal battery storage, with average durations increasing. So they were more sort of between 2 and 4 hours, quite a bit of 4 hour assets as well. And those are the projects that are being built now and that have connected in 24. And these projects have been built on the basis of a, you know, the capacity market with pretty good, you know, good tariffs. They secured some pretty high tariffs, but that forming part of a revenue stack then together with, you know, your wholesale trading and balancing market ancillary service activity. So, you know, it's kind of UK, typical UK kind of revenue stack that you would typically think of. Now, the interesting bit, and that's why, again, I like to think about that as the first wave, is that I think it's close to 95% of that capacity is Enel Green Power. So it's basically being totally dominated by Enel. And a couple of other utilities and players have picked up the rest, but it's basically been Enel game so far in Italy. And that sort of brings us to where we are today, where I think there's a completely new, different phase that is starting.
And how did Enel Green Power get so much market share? What did they do that was special?
I think there's two things. Well, first of all, I mean, Enel is a great company. Like they're a global leader in energy and the energy transition. So they had the vision that Italy was going to need that. And of course, Enel is a very embedded player in Italy as well. They're quasi, governmental. They were a government, owned entity. So, they're extremely strong in Italy. So, I think they, of course, could see storage coming a long, long, long time before anyone else could. And they prepared for it. And of course, they have the means, they're a massive company. So that's, I think, the biggest reason. But the second reason was also in terms of development, a lot of these sites were, let's say, easy, low-hanging fruits in terms of being located, with land they already had next to, big existing power plants being decommissioned. So they had grid. So they had a very privileged position also from the point of view of, actual projects. And then they were able to develop and consent some projects pretty quickly while the rest of the market was still sort of, starting to think about batteries.
So to take stock in Italy then, we've got about a gig of batteries online right now, and then you've got a pipeline. So what does a pipeline look like?
Yeah. So now if we look at sort of the phase two, so development activity has picked up a lot, already since probably 2021, 2022, the first sort of developers started operating. We got in, I think relatively early. We weren't the first ones, but we're first, maybe one of the first really fully dedicated storage companies, but we certainly weren't the first energy company to start doing storage. And since then, activity's really ramped up in 23, and then it really boomed in 2024. So as of now, if we start looking at sort of what's coming and the second wave, there are 4.7 or 4.8 gigawatts of consented projects at the moment. But that includes the 2 gigawatts that are already being built. So let's say there's around 2.83 gigawatts of new projects that have been consented. Now I'm always talking about standalone. So there is a separate, pretty big pipeline of co-located projects in Italy, but that's a bit of a different, it's been just mainly developers putting batteries into their planning consents for projects that are predominantly, solar or wind. So I'd say they're not particularly, deeply thought of co-located. It's just let's throw in some batteries. So there's a lot of that, but the numbers I'm sort of, I've got in my head are about standalone. And so you've got those 4.8 consented projects. There's another, so we don't have very transparent public data. There's a yearly sort of report that comes out in terms of projects that have been filed into planning and that are undergoing permitting. And last year in May, we were at around 15 gigawatts in permitting. My feeling is that now we should be around, we've probably crossed the 30 gigawatt mark of projects undergoing in the planning process. If you think of the second wave of projects that's coming up, these are the mature ones, right? These are the ones that are now in planning and they're coming out, and these are the ones that are going to play a role in the, short to medium term in terms of what's going to be built. Beyond that, of course, as in, many markets, there's been a massive boom of sort of early stage developments. I don't have the figure. You hear figures every now and then, but I'm sure, quite a bit above 100 gigawatts of sort of, land and grid projects kicking around, still trying to figure out, exactly if they're going to file for permit, what the grid situation is like. So there's a huge amount of early stage grid applications out there, which is, common to, I guess, UK, Germany, a lot of other places.
And before we zoom in on the revenue case, sort of how batteries are going to make money, we've got this new TSO-driven storage auction mechanism, which is quite exciting to talk about. But before we get there, can you just talk about the wider energy picture in Italy? So what does peak demand look like, for example? What does the energy mix look like? And are there any big governmental or policy changes that are driving change?
So in terms of energy mix, Italy is, if I'm not mistaken, we're around 40% of consumption, which comes from renewables. So it's a pretty high share already. The thing is, half of that is hydro. So we have, you know, a pretty decent amount of legacy hydro in the Alps predominantly. So, you know, and I don't have the exact figures, but it's just to give a rough idea, you know, probably 20-ish percent hydro, 20% renewables, wind and solar. And we've got a decent amount of imports in Italy. So we do import some, you know, I don't have the exact percentage, but we are a net importer of electricity, mainly from France and other neighboring countries. And the rest in Italy is predominantly gas-fired with a bit of other legacy fossil fuels. But you know, there's a big, big chunk of gas-fired. So that's kind of today's energy mix in Italy. Going forward, we have, you know, there's a couple of sort of reference publications, if you want. You know, there's the European PNIEC plans, which it's always a complicated acronym, but I think it's national. It translates to National Plan of Energy, you know, Future Energy, something like that. I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's the, you know, the central government planning of regarding the energy system. And we have a target there by 2030 to add another 65 gigawatts of wind and solar, predominantly solar. Italy's wind resources aren't great onshore. They've pretty much been exploited, most of the good ones. So it's going to be predominantly solar growth. And these extra 65 gigawatts of installed renewables should bring our overall renewables percentage up to, you know, beyond 60%, 60, 65. And that's without hydro growing. You know, hydro's, you know, not going to grow significantly. So we are really moving quickly towards a much more sort of, you know, intermittent generation mix. And I guess that's, you know, that's one of the big drivers why the TSO and the regulator has, you know, been planning this growth of battery storage, and not only battery storage, also pump hydro, but basically storage capacity to be built into the energy system.
If you think about the solar irradiance that Italy gets, and also the Alps as a hydro resource, Italy and also so much coastline, Italy has got some incredible natural resources.
We have also some pretty big challenges. One being, you know, so the hydro bit has been great. I mean, a lot of Italy's growth has relied on hydro in the past, but that's sort of, you know, pretty much been exploited. Wind wise, the problem with Italy is we're a pretty small country, very hilly. So, you know, we don't have vast amounts of flat land like you might have in, you know, Spain or France or even the UK, I think, has, you know, some sort of bigger landscapes where you can, you know, build tons of wind in Scotland or things like that. We are a pretty land constrained country, hilly, densely populated. And so, you know, it's not such an easy, it is a challenge, the massive build out of renewables. And offshore is a great sort of prospect for the future, but we've got very, very deep seas around Italy. So it's basically, there's very few non-floating wind projects that are in the pipeline. The big offshore game in Italy is going to be floating. So, you know, that's still sort of, I guess, you know, sort of in the making, right? I mean, floating's still a little bit not there.
And in the UK, choosing between farmland and solar panels is quite an easy decision. So that's going to really wind people up. Sorry if you're a farmer. But choosing between a vineyard and solar irradiance for generation is quite a difficult decision. So let's talk about this new TSO-driven energy storage auction mechanism. I'm sure our listeners will have a keen interest in this. And it's very different. It's very different compared to other mechanisms so far in other markets in Europe and elsewhere. So can you tell us more about what's the strategy here and what does this look like for assets?
Yeah. So that's no doubt. I mean, Italy has chosen a path to the deployment of storage that is quite different from other countries. It started very similar, right, with the kind of, again, capacity, yeah, some sort of fast reserve sort of type of mechanism, then a capacity market with a revenue stack. And then it's sort of pivoted to a much more centralized, regulated mechanism to deploy vast amounts of storage. And what we're referring to is this so-called MACSE mechanism. So it's Meccanismo di Approvvigionamento di Capacità di Stoccaggio Elettrico. So that's what it sort of stands for. And what it reflects is a strong view from Italy's regulator and TSO that batteries are, to some extent, almost grid assets. So they're seen as grid enablers rather than generation projects that can be that make sense that private company owns them, operates them, and does whatever they want with them. So that it all starts from this vision of storage. And look, I can't say I'm a massive fan of this vision. I think markets do a pretty good job of optimizing things, and I think we've seen success stories of deployment of storage in very market market-driven environments like Australia, the US, the UK. I'm not necessarily an immediate fan of this approach, but on the other hand, look, I think it does provide Italy a huge opportunity to deploy storage quickly. It's just going to be a bit different. And so if we go into it in a bit more detail, what this mechanism is about, it's about the TSO procuring pretty large amounts. So we're talking about the target here is 50 gigawatt hours between now and 2030. So considering we're in 2025, there's about 5 years or a bit less than 5 years to go. We're talking, 10 gigawatt hours per year to be procured. And the idea here is that there will be an auction system. You will be bidding as a project owner, as a project operator, you will be bidding into the auction system to secure a 15-year flat tariff. There's a small indexation portion of it, but it's essentially a fixed tariff with a bit of indexation for the O&M part. And you will be bidding in terms of euros per megawatt hour per year. So you bid in your price. If you win, you secure this 15-year tariff. And that will be essentially the very large part of your revenue. You do have a small component, which is not fully regulated, because these assets will also, they'll essentially be operating on the basis of, inputs from Turner. So Turner, the TSO, is your, is the one providing the toll. So they're operating your battery. Although the when you're not operating according, on their orders under the MACSE, you can participate on the ancillary service market, the so-called MSD, and the revenues that you will secure on that market, you get to keep 20% of them. This is at least in the last draft. So, the process of developing the MACSE has been going on for a few years. It's been through several rounds of consultation approval. We're basically almost there, but we're all still waiting for the last and final, rules to come out. So some of these parameters may be slightly tweaked, but, not that much. So the point is fully regulated tolling revenue from the TSO, plus a little component of upside you're probably going to be able to get by participating in balancing markets.
And this is so fascinating and so far removed from anything we're used to, right? So the optimizer is the TSO, and you're giving the keys to the TSO for 15 years, and your job is to just keep the thing available, I guess, and you have some sort of availability requirement. So what about cycles and availability and how the asset is used and degradation and all of those technical parameters? How is this auction mechanism or this new service going to account for that?
Yeah, so that's been, of course, the object of a lot of, work from Turner to start with, and then from all us as industry players sort of, contributing in this consultation process. And I think we're still, there's still going to be possibly some tweaks. So the numbers I'm going to give you are from the last round of what was published. They might change slightly when the final rules come out. But you're absolutely right. So you have the TSO operating, optimizing your battery. There has to be a set of rules, right? So who's doing what? Who has which obligations? And so as an asset owner, you're obliged, if you win the auction, well, first of all, to build the asset and then to make it, to essentially make the batteries available according to a set of parameters for the entire 15 years. There are, in terms of duration, before we go into sort of degradation and availability and all that, a big topic of discussion around MACSE has always been the topic of duration. So you're bidding in euro per megawatt hour terms, but you know, there isn't a, the only thing the auction rules say is that you can bid with assets that are between 4 and 12 hours duration. So that opens up a, you know, a pretty broad window of durations, and to account for the different service that different types of durations can provide to the electricity system, they have introduced some coefficients in charge and discharge that essentially try to level the ground a bit. So, you know, I'll give a few numbers and hopefully they'll be clear. But so if you assume, you know, you want to bid 30,000 euros per megawatt hour per year, right, as your bid. If you bid with a 4 hour system, so where these, you know, where your each megawatt hour can be delivered quicker if you want, right? If you've got four hour system compared to an 8 hour system, then your bidding price in the merit order curve that will determine who wins the auction will have a bit of a bump up. So you get a bit of a boost. And that's given by some coefficients that have been determined by in these rules. Whereas if you're bidding with an 8 hour, they've built those sort of the rules around an 8 hour as the default case. So if you're bidding with 8 hours, then you know no coefficient changes. And if you bid for more than 8 hours, which you know probably no one will, at least no lithium ion battery we expect will be going in with longer durations, then you get a slight bump down because you're per each megawatt hour that you can provide to the system, it's going to take you longer. You're going to react slower and all that. So they've created a mechanism where you can bid with a range of durations, these coefficients, and of course, what's happening on the CapEx side will and development side will determine actually what duration projects are optimal. And at the moment, I think the consensus is that although Turner has always sort of spoken about 8 hours as being the ideal from their point of view, my feeling, and I won't say it's the consensus, but our feeling is that we're probably going to sit between 4 and 6 hours generally. On one side, because what's been developed so far in the market has predominantly been 4 hour assets. There are a lot of projects now going in as 8 hours, but then again, there's other aspects around firefighting rules and distances and all that, which will make it not super easy to cram a lot of capacity in.
Anyone who knows me well knows I am a bit of a free market guy, and I don't understand how. I might make myself quite unpopular in Italy for this, but I don't understand how this. We've got so many questions. How would this work, and why would the TSO think they have the foresight to know what the operating parameters of these kind of assets will look like in a 15-year period? Because if you have a more of a market-driven approach, like in the UK and the US, and in other markets, Australia, then you don't need to tie your hands on a 15-year contract because the market does that for you, and then you have price signals and pricing, and projects behave in the way you want them to throughout that 15-year life cycle, depending on what you need rather than what you set up front. So if you needed to get a 15-year contract to make projects make sense, I get why you do that, but you don't, because this is a pretty mature technology, and given the right market structures, investors are happy to invest. So I don't see why the TSO would make that move. But also, Who's the counterparty here, right? So the TSO is on the hook for 50 gigawatt hours by the end of this decade. So who's the counterparty? Is the TSO's balance sheet big enough for this? Or is it just wrapped up into some sort of big regulated asset base where ultimately it's the ratepayer, the taxpayer, who, whatever happens, is the counterparty here? It feels like it's... I don't know how does this work. I just my brain is blown by this.
It is very different. I mean, for sure, it's very different. And I think we sort of take it now. We've been in it for a few years. We've seen it develop. So we sort of
But I must be missing something, right? So let's do the counterfactual. Why is this a really good thing for the TSO to wrap this up for 15 years? What am I missing? Why is this important to do it this way? What's the argument?
So first, let me answer the question about who the counterpart is, because that's important. It's not the balance sheet of the TSO. What they've designed is, so I've told you about what it looks like for the asset owner. So for guys like us, what happens on the other side is that Turner wants to be the sort of with these assets that'll come online, Turner will create products with various durations. hedging products, if you want, time shifting products. I think that's how it's time shifting essentially. So they will create time shifting products with different durations, from, you know, hourly, sub-hourly to yearly, even multi-year products for time shifting, that will be then traded on the regulated electricity market, and that, you know, people will take the position on the other side. So it will be utilities, traders, large consumers, and, you know, all people, or anyone accessing the wholesale electricity market will be able to be on the other side of this big trade. It's just that you will have Terna in the middle coordinating all this with its algorithms, you know, guiding where more or less capacity is going to be built. Because Italy is also a zonal market. We've got seven zones. And so one of the characteristics of this auction will be that there'll be different allocations depending on the zones. So, you know, why does it have to be like this? I don't think it necessarily has to. I'm also, you know, a more of a markets guy. But I think the argument from, you know, the regulator and Terna is that they prefer a centralized planning. They think centralized planning of the rollout of this technology that they see as a grid support rather than a merchant asset. They feel it's important that it's guided and controlled, and they love the idea, I think, of operating 50 gigawatt hours of batteries on the market, you know, as a TSO. Let's make them feel pretty.
Don't
pretty
we powerful. All? Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a fun job. Yeah, I'd like to do that. Okay, that was my next question, that there's of course the locational element to it because it's Italy. What's interesting to me though is, in order to design this system, it's a big risk on move, right? So in order to design a service or a mechanism to lock in this many megawatt hours or gigawatt hours, you either, if I was doing it, you know, I'm no expert, but you'd have to take one of two approaches. You either do it really flexibly, so you buy yourself room to maneuver throughout the 15 years if the grid or system requirements change and you haven't forecasted that right, or you lock it up. If you lock it up, you could be overpaying, right? And you could you're lacking the flexibility that you leave later. But then if you put too much flexibility in, you might as well have just left it as a market and done, you know, less, you know, more frequent auctions and shorter durations. But I must say, there is, if you're listening to this and you're thinking Q's just talking his own book, that is kind of true, right? Because from our point of view, to do indices on this market and benchmarking it, if everyone's got a 15-year contract, it's less interesting. So there is a conflict of interest there. I must identify that. But that's not the reasoning for my argument here, I must say.
Yeah. No, of course. And again, look, I think, you know, it is a different approach. Now, the good thing, though, and I hope we're going to talk about that as well, is that we and many other market participants don't think that's going to be the only way of doing battery storage in Italy, for various reasons. I mean, one reason being that at least so far, Terna has given pretty strong indications that they expect to procure batteries for now only in the sort of center-south regions of Italy and islands. They've indicated that they don't want any batteries in the center-north and north. Whereas, you know, there are merchant spreads up there. There's ancillary service revenues that can be taken. You can participate in the capacity market. So, you know, there is a business case to be made.
But aren't we heading to a world where the round trip efficiency of battery, lithium ion batteries, is so much higher than pumped hydro that you'd probably, you know, as a developer, you'd want to size up next to some of these hydros and eat their margins as CapEx comes down.
Yeah, it could be. We haven't looked at that. That's a good point. We should look into it. Yeah, so that's, you know, we still firmly believe there will be both models in Italy going forward. And you know, there are some positives from our point of view. And, you know, I understand fully that from a trader point of view, from an optimizer point of view, the whole Maxis story isn't particularly attractive, right? But from a developer point of view and an investor point of view, I do think it does create a mechanism that has some aspects that are very attractive. And then that's, I think, one of the big reasons that is, you know, making Italy one of the sort of, you know, hot markets, hopefully in the near future in Europe, you know, big volumes and very clear regulated revenue streams that are perfect for, you know, infra investment.
Yeah, absolutely. For an asset owner, it sounds fantastic. I guess it depends how stringent the requirements are and how competitive it is. this first auction is going to be fascinating to see what price comes out. I might be totally wrong, right? They might get, it might be like some of these Middle Eastern solar auctions, which come out at so cheap that it all sort of makes sense in the end. Who knows?
Yeah, that's, you know, we're all waiting to see. I think you're right. There's one aspect of it, which is the technical parameters. So, you know, we sort of mentioned it before, but of course, having Turner as your you know, toll provider, you've got to set some rules, and you know, there's some rules around degradation, which are a bit weird at the moment. You know, the rule, or the last set of rules, came out with a maximum 1% per year degradation profile, which, now granted, it's Turner's saying that it's only going to be one cycle per day, so it's batteries that are not cycling particularly hard, but still, you know, at least we can't, you know, of all the suppliers we talk to, you don't get one percent per year degradation, at least from, you know, your typical starting point at SAT. So either they change the rule, or people are going to have to oversize or augment along the way. RTE wise, they
also think, how are you going to measure it? How are you going to prove it? If it's like the, because there's a load of ways, you just look at the UK capacity market and how you prove capacity. There are so many different ways to slice that up.
Yeah. And there's things that make it even more difficult, because we've got also some, you know, requirements on RTE, which have their own set of definitions. You have another thing that is going to make things interesting, which is that you can also have hybrid projects. So if you say have a, you know, a 200 megawatt project, you can bid a portion of it into the Maxi auctions and decide to run the rest merchant. So that'll add additional complexities in terms of, you know, proving that you're meeting the degradation RTE requirements, you know. So you know, on one hand, it is on paper quite a simple, straightforward, you know, revenue stream structure, but there's a lot of devil in the details. So I think, you know, it still will require a lot of expertise and a lot of, you know, a lot of what lessons learned from other markets will still come in handy in a different way, though, in a different way.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the more merchant side then. So this is not the only game in town if you're a developer. There is the other side. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. So we're definitely looking at it, you know, in a lot of detail. We've got projects in the north, and at the moment, you know, we don't expect those to have a Maxi contract. Now, the scenario there looks very similar to the UK. So you're building your financial model assuming, you know, wholesale trading revenue. So you've got the day ahead MGP market and then the intraday AMI market. You have then the ancillary services market in Italy, the so-called MSD, which is a pretty liquid and deep market. Now, I'm not a massive expert of ancillary services, so if, you know, I might say it wrong, but the way I understand it, and a kid would understand it, is that whereas in some markets, like, I don't know, Germany, you have some very specific products for different types of ancillary services, and as a market operator, you kind of bid into each one of them or have a contract in each one of the different ones. In Italy, there's this sort of big pool of ancillary service volume that you can bid your asset into, and then it's the TSO that kind of allocates that into the different types of services it needs. And this is the MSD, and it has a day ahead component and a sort of intraday balancing component to it. So these are the two, you know, big chunks. And then look, we're all still hoping and planning to bid into the capacity market, the future capacity market auctions. So Italy has said clearly that it's going to be structural. So, you know, we now have confirmed auctions for 2027. There should be a 2028 capacity market auction coming out towards the end of this year. And Turner has indicated it's going to be structural. So we're going to expect, you know, there's going to be a 2029 capacity market auction and so on. And when you bid in with existing assets, you get a one-year contract. When you bid in with new assets to be built, then you get a 15-year contract as well. So that, you know, is an element which is very good, especially in terms of, you know, hedging your revenue streams a bit, having a contracted part that you can then go and finance. Right? So the way we're looking at it is that these non-Maxi assets, we're aiming to have a capacity market portion, and then we're aiming to reach a probably 50 to 60% hopefully hedged revenue with floor-like products, most likely, and then have the rest merchant. And on that basis, you know, try to close project finance and get the projects to FID. That's at least our approach, what we're going for.
Yeah, I mean the development doesn't stop beyond this new mechanism. I'm just thinking this through in my head. So not to keep banging on about this, and I'm really sorry if if you're a big fan of this mechanism, then I would love to have you on a podcast and come and talk about it. But so picture the scene. It's, let's say it's year 2030, and the Turner, the Italian RTO, has contracted up, let's say 20 gigawatt, no, you said 50, right? Let's say they do 20 gigawatt hours, 20, 30 gigawatt hours of batteries at, I don't know, 30,000-40,000 euros a megawatt hour, to give it a number. I don't know what that'll be.
Yep.
But midway through that period, the CapEx curves for battery technology has come down so aggressively that developers have also built a load more batteries that are outside of this mechanism, who are predominantly making their money from traditional price signals from the wholesale market.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, the grid looks very different. What if in that world, you actually don't need 20 or 30 gigawatt hours contracted for 15 years and Turner doesn't need them at all? They're not even getting utilized because the bulk of the work is being done by price signals in the zonal market as is. And then the rate payer is on the hook for all of this contracted revenue when the other assets are doing it anyway. I mean, it depends what you believe is going to happen to CapEx curves, but
yeah.
I think they're going to keep on decreasing aggressively and we're going to have batteries everywhere.
Yeah. Look, we hope so too. I mean, again, we're not cheerleaders for the Maxe mechanism. We think there's a lot of good aspects of it. For us as developers, there's a big yield compression opportunity with Maxe, massive yield compression opportunity. So, we like it. But we also want Italy to have a non-Maxe future, right? We need that. And my only answer to that sort of, to what you said, which I partially agree to, is that I think it's not that different from, I don't know, I could say like a 20-year wind CFD or offshore CFDs or these kind of things, or even worse, feed-in tariffs. Right now, CFDs, they have a bit of an element of, you give or take, but the old feed-in tariffs, they would just give, right? And I think, again, Italy's sort of chosen, the TSO, the regulator has chosen to maybe, give up if you want a bit of optimization, because sure, this LCOS will come down probably. So, they're now locking themselves into something, but I think they're doing that saying, we're willing to sort of, sacrifice that optimization because we need to get a lot of batteries built now, because that's what we need to enable the energy transition. That's what we need to offset, even bigger grid reinforcements. And so I think in their mind, in the whole long-term picture of what the energy system is in Italy, this still makes sense. That's at least the answer I give myself.
No, I get the argument. I guess the problem is it depends where on the technology S curve you are. And if you're willing to overpay to stimulate a new technology to get moving, then great. As long as you're on the first bit of the S curve, but when you're in the almost vertical bit and it's going to happen anyway, which I actually think we're approaching, then do you need the stimulus anyway? But anyway, we've talked too much about that. And I didn't get you on to defend that program. In fact, I didn't know much about it until now. And I've just been shooting from the hip. So I might, if you're listening to this, I might change my mind in the future. But hey ho, we've got so many questions that we didn't get through, but we've run out of time. So I want to go to your last two questions. Is there anything that you want to plug? This is the chance to talk to the energy storage community. What do you want our listeners to know?
Well, look, I'd say we're excited about our projects. I mean, it's a bit of self-promotion, but it's the only thing I can think of. We're really excited about the projects we've been able to develop. I think the big thing that we always bang on about when we're talking about there's lots of projects and what differentiates projects in the market is as in many markets, it's grid. We've been able to secure some incredible grid positions in terms of plugging into existing substations without reinforcement works. This is another big topic we didn't touch, is grid in Italy, which we might want to discuss some other time. But it's a big differentiator, and we're also very excited about the work we've been doing. Although we're still a pretty lean developer, but we put a ton of work into working with the supply chain, working with lenders, working with off-takers, and really getting ready to transition towards our model of building, owning, and operating some of our assets. So, bit of self-promotion there.
Of course, this is your chance. And now to the contrarian view. So what do you believe that not a lot of other people believe?
I don't know if I'd call it a contrarian view, but I think it is something that I think a lot of us in the industry often lose sight of. I think battery storage has certain elements of very sort of short-term view on it. So as a developer, you got to be fast. You got to get land. You got to get grid. You got to permit quick. You know, you got to build quick because you're going to, you know, maybe make big revenues at the beginning, and then these, you know, these markets are a bit shallow. And so there's this big push of about being fast and then, you know, connecting things quickly. And, you know, we're looking at objectives to 2030. And I think that makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, I think as well, when we're stressing so much about going so fast, sometimes we should all sort of take a step back and consider that, you know, the energy transition has just started. The 30s and 2040s will all be about decarbonization as well. Flexibility is going to be a very long game. You know, it's not something that's going to be solved in the next 3 or 4 years and then we'll all have nothing else to do. It's going to be a very long game. Technology might evolve and change, markets might evolve and change, but it's a very long game. And again, looking at from a developer asset owner point of view, I think that one thing we shouldn't lose sight of is when we're developing projects and when we're, you know, trying to figure out what value they have and what they can do, is that a big part of this is that you're securing some grid positions and also land, but grid positions mainly, which you might be using today for batteries, but, you know, when the battery is done in 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, they're still going to be crucial nodes in our future's electricity system. And there's going to be a ton of other things we're going to be able to do with them. So, you know, again, I think it's just this point of every now and then stopping and taking a bit of a longer term view and not being so, you know, rush. It's flexibility is not only going to be about that.
Yeah, I think there is. I totally agree with you. There is a chance that when I retire, which is probably 30 years time, still the value accrues to the owner of the grid connection. It's a bit like that Patek Philippe advert, which is like, you never own a Patek Philippe, you just hold on to it for the next generation. Grid connections are a bit like that, right? But exactly. Yes, right now we're banging on about putting batteries on them, but do you really think with this century of like 3 or 4x growth in electric demand, electrification, do you really think that the grid's just going to get into gear and start building all these new transmission lines that we need? Probably not. So the grid connection, the residual value of the grid connection might end up being the most valuable asset on the balance sheet of one of these projects.
Absolutely. Fully agree there.
Mahal, I want to say a massive thank you for joining us on the podcast. Unfortunately, well, we got about less than halfway through all the questions I had for you. So I'd love to invite you on a podcast again to talk about Italy in more detail. It really has been a privilege. And thank you for sharing so much knowledge with our listeners.
Thank you. It's been great to be here. And look forward to hopefully being here again soon.